The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Monday, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Bastards of Boston Baseball. My name is Cody Paulson. Joining us tonight is Charlie Smith and Terry Cushman. Charlie will be joining us out of Los Angeles, California, by way of Providence, Rhode Island. Terry is out of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. Charlie, Terry, how are you guys doing tonight, and where can the fans find you on X?
I am doing just fine. Super, super excited about this most recent series because I got to watch it in my lovely house. So you can find me on X at Smith_MLB. What a fun series this was. Terrence, how are you?
I am splendid as always. You can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. You can find me on Twitter, as I will continue to call it, at CushmanMLB. And I think I forgot to mention it last week, but I do have a Facebook baseball-only account, and you can find me at Terry Talks Sox. And it's just a carbon copy of my Twitter, so if you're already following me there, you're welcome to come over to Facebook. But it's the same stuff. So real quick before we get on some podcast news to get to. Micah Storms has departed the podcast. It was kind of a mutual decision. And Micah tweeted about it. So feel free to go see what he wrote at Ballpark Buzz. But it was basically, he wasn't real comfortable with the brand and basically said as much, and you know, we had a conversation about it and did what we thought was best for the podcast. So that's what occurred last week. The other announcement, and this for the longtime listeners who have been with us for since nearly the beginning, Jeremy Schilling will be returning to take that seat that Micah occupied. So he'll be back. He's going to slide right into the midweek crew this week. That's where he's going to stay for the season. So he'll be on with Jason Kelly and myself, and we'll be covering the Baltimore Orioles series. But so a big change, and it happens sometimes, but the show will go on. And we had a hell of a weekend in Anaheim.
Yeah, it was always fun recording with Micah. We wish him nothing but the best in his future endeavors, and we're excited to keep it moving with Jeremy. But as Terry mentioned, there was a lot to cover. Very exciting weekend. A quick look at the standings. We are currently in second place, just a game back behind the Yankees, who continue to be on a tear to start the season. A game and a half ahead of the Orioles, and the Rays and the Blue Jays will round out the remainder of the AL East. But looking at the weekend series, we did take 2 out of 3 against Anaheim, which leads us to studs and duds. So, Charlie, why don't you lead us off with your stud for the weekend series?
I know this is going to seem a little crazy with a little bit of a repeat here, but before I even get into stats, I just want to go over a couple things. Not even looking, who do you think leads Major League Baseball with runs?
Man. My baseball following has been all whacked out with
all
everything
good.
On the West
let's,
Coast.
So. Let's preface it like this. Who has been playing out of their damn mind to start the season in Major League Baseball? I think we all know who that is.
Why don't you tell us, man?
Mookie Betts is leading the league in runs scored in almost every natural category. Who do you think is number 2 in runs scored in Major League Baseball?
Give me Acuña.
Try Tyler O'Neill. All right. So Tyler O'Neill had another 4-for-10 series. That's his second series going 4-for-10. Again, 3 home runs, 3 RBIs. He is now the first Boston Red Sox since I don't even know who has started the season off with 5 solo home runs in the first 2 weeks of his season. But I mean, this is a guy that's absolutely tearing the cover off the ball. I literally have nothing bad that I can possibly say about him. 4-for-10 again, drew walks, had 3 runs in the first and the third game, is leading Major League Baseball in slugging percentage, on base percentage, and is 3rd in OBP behind Mookie Betts and Carlos Correa, is tied for the major league lead with home runs of 5. And as we just talked about, is 2nd in runs. So nice and easy. Tyler O'Neill absolutely crushed it.
Terry?
Well, I'm not there yet. I'm not ready to eat crow on my, what would you call it? My outburst that took place when the trade happened. I'm just not there yet. Charlie's all the way there. Charlie is, you know, I think these last 2 weeks have been his Mardi Gras in regards to the O'Neill thing, but it's been fun to watch. He's been healthy. We're going to talk about some guys that aren't healthy later on, but man, that power stroke is there. We haven't even seen him at Fenway Park yet. We haven't seen what he's going to possibly do to that green monster. So fun to watch. You know, the one, well, I guess Jaron Duran's killing it, so that's another outfielder you're not too worried about, but he's holding it down. And if he's my 2024 Hunter Renfroe by the end of the year, so be it.
One real quick thing. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Coming in clear? Perfect. Yeah. Amen. I think it is the headphones. Anywho, I think Tyler O'Neill is going to shine brighter than a diamond, shine brighter than Hunter Renfroe. I'm actually getting these like itchy Jason Bay vibes. You know, 34, 35 homers, 115 RBIs. Someone that's really not afraid of anybody. And if you're a pitcher, you probably don't want to hit him because if that's coming at you, good luck. But he's doing everything that I expected him to do. He's been absolutely incredible, and I'm super, super excited to see what else he can do. Cody.
No, I mean, he's had a great start to the season. On top of it all, you know, he's got power to all fields, right? You have opposite field home runs. You have, you know, the pole ball, as Terry was mentioning. He hasn't even played at Fenway yet. What is he going to do to the Green Monster? It's all very exciting. And I think, you know, on top of it, it's they're coming up in big moments, right? It's not like it's, you know, he's hitting a solo shot in the 6th inning of a game that's a blowout, right? You know, the game 1 home run, I believe, was after the Angels already had a grand slam to tie the game back, right? So, you know, kind of pushed us forward. And to start game 3, you know, he had a home run early in the game to kind of help set the tone, get the offense at ease after, you know, yesterday's, we'll call it a monotonous game. So it's timely hitting, it's hitting in big spots, and it's, you know, being just reliable in the outfield, right? You know, the outfield was definitely something that we had talked about ad nauseum this offseason, saying, hey, what are we going to do? We need to bring in some outfield bats. We need to bring in a right-hander. We got to balance this lineup. We got to, you know, find defense. We had a lot of issues that we were concerned with. You know, Masataka can't play the outfield. Duran made major strides, but, you know, is he going to be able to keep it going? Rafaela is a prospect. What are we looking at, right? And, you know, with the story injury that we're going to get into later, the emergence of O'Neill, the emergence of Rafaela, and, you know, the continuation of Duran, this does give us some flexibility, right? We don't, you know, kind of have to be forced into, you know, I guess a weak lineup or a weak defensive alignment just because of injury at this point. You know, we can shift around and do have that flexibility because a guy like O'Neill is producing, you know, knock on wood, at a level that he's currently producing. But it's been very fun to watch. You know, I'm going to continue to knock on wood for each one of these games. You know, I don't want to put anything into the ether that sways it otherwise. So it's just been an absolute joy. And, you know, I think we've seen it in seasons past, right? A guy will carry water for the team for a month or so and, you know, kind of help give us a couple of games we might not have won to kind of help keep going towards the wild card or the division. And, you know, if this is Tyler O'Neill's month, we'll take it, right? Because starting the season off on a good foot, going 7-3 on a West Coast swing to start the season isn't even something the 2019 team did. And, you know, to be able to come back from that, to have games at a normal time, and have a winning record, keep pace in the AL East, I think is something to behold. And, you know, a quick side point, we only have one more series of games that'll start after 7:05. We have a series out in LA with the Dodgers, I believe, that have, you know, that 8 or 9 o'clock start, but, you know, it's home free. It's all in the regular course of first pitch starting times. But anybody else have anything else they'd like to mention on Tyler O'Neill?
I think you made a good point. You know, he's some of those home runs are early in the game. Like, he's getting the party started a lot of the time. And sometimes you need that spark, you know, sometimes it's contagious and the offense just falls right in behind him and, you know, they keep the line moving. So yeah, he's also, I forget who I was talking to. He has a very mature look. Like, he looks a little bit older. I can't describe it, but he almost has like a old school type look. Like, if you put a black and white picture of him up, he would fit right in, you know, in the 40s and 50s. I don't know what it is. He just has that look, you know, of a old school ball player.
Very true. T, who do you have for your stud for the weekend?
My stud for the weekend is the guy who is now leading the Boston Red Sox in runs batted in. So if you're in your car right now, you're probably thinking, it's got to be Devers. Maybe it's Duran, actually. No, it's Reese McGuire. That guy. He's been a spark plug, and we were talking about him before he came on, and I know he had that thing, you know, where he kind of got in trouble there. Charlie making the hand motion to confirm he knows exactly what I'm talking about. But I'm a big Reese McGuire fan. Last year, he was very good, especially when it came to pinch hitting. He was always just kind of ripping that ball up the gap. It was usually a single, but if there was runners on second and third, they came home and he did his job. And I wish he could gun guys down at second base that are trying to steal like Connor Wong does, but he does everything else just so well. And surprisingly, Alex Cora said he's my starting catcher. He's my starting catcher for 2024 because he's swinging the bat so good. And Reese has just kind of won him over. And that surprises me because I thought Connor Wong was adequate last year. I didn't think he was terrible. I mean, we've been kind of spoiled over the last 20 years. Christian Vasquez kind of emerged. He had a nice 3 or 4 year run, you know, with a little bit of power and timely hitting. And you had Jason Varitek for so long. Even Salto Lamacchia could come through in a clutch moment. But I like what I'm seeing with Reese. I think that spot is just kind of, we know Kyle Teal is coming at some point, probably next year at the earliest, but we'll see. But I like what I'm seeing from Reese McGuire. He's a good teammate. He's not a selfish guy. He just goes out there and does what's asked of him. And I'll be curious to see what he does for the rest of the year, but I love that bat, especially in the 7-9 hole where you're not used to getting a ton of production.
Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, when you go 3-for-8 and you have 2 big home runs and you end up having 7 RBIs in a series, you've more than done your job. You're averaging a couple RBIs a game and didn't even play game 2. So who knows? He might have done more damage in game 2. Maybe we sweep the series. Maybe we're 8-2 after 10 games and we're tied with the major league record with the highest, you know, best record, 8-2. I mean, if someone asked you after 10 games, you see the Red Sox 7-3, None of us were going to say yes. If any of us had said, oh, yeah, do you think the Astros will go 3-7? None of us would say yes. So this has been just a bonkers start to the season. Granted, we faced Oakland, we faced Anaheim, and now we've got, you know, Seattle as well to start the season. It's going to be a little bit interesting. I'm really curious to see how the Red Sox can continue to do business against some of the upper echelon level teams.
Charlie, you made a good point that this, you know, this team is producing well, but it's against the A's and, you know, the Angels. And, you know, yes, we did have the series against the Mariners in there, but, you know, this is things we weren't doing last year, right? So, like, even to make sure that we are winning the games that we're supposed to be, quote-unquote, supposed to be winning, or winning the games that you need to win to remain competitive, it's just refreshing to see. But, you know, to get any sort of production out of the catcher spot, to have a battery of McGuire and Wong, I think is such a blessing, right? As Terry mentioned, we have been very fortunate that the catcher hasn't been, you know, a dearth of talent or production over the course of the last 20 years. You know, we've been very fortunate to have not only offensive production, but good defensive production as well. And, you know, I think you kind of got to split that a little bit between Wong and McGuire at this point, right? McGuire is a little bit more offensively, well, I guess we'll call it leaning. And then, you know, Wong has that offensive output, but he's, you know, more of the defensive specialist if you had to pick one flavor for the two of them. But, you know, a 5 RBI day to have 8 RBIs of the season out of the catcher spot is a sight to behold, a sight for sore eyes. And, you know, you got to give the guy his flowers. He definitely deserves to be on the stud list. And, you know, it's just nice to get production from the bottom half of the order, right? After that sixth spot, the last couple of years, we're like, great, cool. Just get us to the top of the order. We'll just give away this half inning and we'll pick it up and we'll try to do it playing essentially an arm down. So, you know, definitely a worthy stud for this series. Anything else you gentlemen would like to mention?
I mean, he's hitting 333 with a 385 on base, slugging 625. I mean, for a guy who's hit probably less than 30 home runs in his career, that is off the charts. It'll come down to normal, at least the power numbers part of it. But I wouldn't be surprised if he hovers around 290, 300, you know, as far as the batting average goes. But you know, he does just enough, like I said, to kind of keep things moving. He'll plate a couple of runs for you and doing a hell of a
perhaps
job.
Perhaps a sneak peek into Hot Take Tuesday. McGuire averages 300 for the season. I will say, though, he did put the game away today, right? That 3-run home run, I think, went from 4-0 to 7-0. Like, those are the ones that we need because, like, the Angels were kind of hanging around. We had botched game one, gave up a grand slam. So, like, getting that little bit extra breathing room to make it, you know, more than a grand slam difference, I think, is huge. You're going to hate me for saying this, but, like, I think it was one of John Farrell's quotes was, like, 5-0 looks a lot better than 4-0, and it was just because a grand slam could tie it. And I was like, man, what a loser mentality. But it is kind of true, which is unfortunate. But yeah, anything else you guys want to chip in there on McGuire? All righty, moving on to the last stud for this series. It'll be the one that I picked. And for me, it's got to be Tanner Houck. There has been, you know, unbelievable amounts of scrutiny on the pitching program, on the pitching staff, the bullpen, the rotation. And this guy had a lot riding on his performance this year. You know, is he going to be a bullpen arm? Is he going to be a rotation? Is he even going to be with the organization? And he's gone out and he's shoved twice, right? He still has a 0 ERA. He only gave up 2 walks, 7 Ks over 6 innings on a day that the bullpen desperately needed some relief. They have been pretty taxed the last 2 games. And, you know, he was able to go out there and get deep into the games. And as I kind of mentioned on the last point, you know, yeah, it's the Angels, but guess what? Houck wasn't doing this last year either, right? He wasn't flipping that rotation, that lineup card over the third time. He wasn't going deep into games, and he was giving up a lot of walks, you know, a lot of batters on the base path. So I don't know if it's a Bailey program. I don't know if he's figured something out. I don't know, you know, necessarily what it is, but keep it up. But it's been, you know, everything I think we've been wanting to see from him because he has this stuff. You can see when he's pitching that he has, you know, kind of the tools, the repertoire, the arsenal to be able to go out and have these kind of performances and have these kind of games. And to Charlie's point, you know, we're going to need to see it against a little bit more, I guess we'll call it major league level talent. But hey, you got to go out and you got to execute against a team that's in front of you. And that's what he's done twice now in the season, even more so in this series. So for me, Tanner Houck is the stud. Charlie, what are your thoughts?
I mean, here's the thing. When you look at the numbers, numbers don't lie. The Boston Red Sox are second in runs allowed. They're second in run differential behind Cleveland in both. They're third in runs scored behind Cleveland and Texas by three. So you have a starting pitching core that nobody, thought was going to be this relevant, this talented. Again, not facing top tier teams. We've had nobody really get blown out or destroyed like some other starters on other teams. Colorado's had one that's gotten ripped twice. You know, the Yankees have gotten torched a couple times. The Dodgers, you know, Yamamoto got crushed in his first game. So we've been playing way past incredible as far as our starting rotation has been concerned. Everybody's locked in. You're getting almost a quality start a game. This is something we used to hope for once every five games. We're now getting it two or three times in a round of the rotation here. So instead of getting it once every 5 or 6 days, we're now getting it minimum once a series. So Tanner Houck going out there, 6 innings, 7 strikeouts. I mean, that's just incredible. You can't say anything bad about that. If you give 6 innings and you've kept the opposing team to 2-3 runs or less, you've done your job. You haven't allowed any runs. So looking back at the numbers, if you look at what the Stars have been able to do, and on a consistent basis too, Houck still has an ERA of 0. He's not allowing anything. Back-to-back quality starts, 10 strikeouts in his first one. Didn't hit 10, but was damn close this time. I mean, you can't find a flaw in the rotation right now. They're just absolutely locked in.
Well, I mean, I think Houck was the sharpest of all of the pitchers in their second start. Crawford was doing okay, but he just kind of lost it. And Garrett Whitlock, only 4 strikeouts, had 4 walks, kind of walked the tightrope there. You know, neither one of them, they didn't get lit up by any means, but it felt like the Andrew Bailey magic was kind of disappeared after Houck's last start. Like, his was phenomenal, and then the next 4 went, and Houck today wasn't quite as sharp as his previous start, but it was still very good. He had some traffic on the bases in the first 3 innings. I think in the 3rd inning, he even had a leadoff double, but nobody came home to score. And then in his final 3 innings, 4, 5, and 6, it was essentially 3 up and 3 down with the exception of a walk in the 6th inning. So he really locked in and doing exactly what you want him to do, give you at least 6 innings. And that's been a problem for him in the past. Hasn't been a problem so far in 2024. And it wasn't a problem in spring training either. That dude has been lights out since they arrived, you know, at Fort Myers. So we'll see. He's luckily going to miss the Orioles series. He won't be having a start in there. That would have been fun if he did. But I love what I'm seeing. He's probably my favorite guy in that rotation. I still love watching Nick Pivetta, but man, it's like, where is the ceiling for Tanner Houck? Because he might not even be close to it right now. Hopefully this is the year we've all been waiting for, you know, where he breaks out, establishes himself as, I think, at least a number two, and he could be an ace. Nobody thought Chris Sale was going to be Chris Sale. He spent his first 2 or 3 years as a reliever. And then they're like, well, let's start him in the rotation. And man, his strikeout numbers in that decade were just off the charts. I don't know. There was a 7 or 8 year gap where I don't think anybody had more, you know, so We'll see with Tanner. I'm not saying he's going to quite reach that level, but yeah. So Charlie,
real quick, as far as the Chicago White Sox are concerned, after Chris Sale, because you're talking about the fact that he started off as a reliever, then became a starter. There's another guy who was on that team a couple of years ago, excuse me, Garrett Crochet, who was their closer, then had, he missed the whole season for, shoulder injury, came back last year, wasn't really with it. They converted him to a starter, similar to Chris Sale, who started as a reliever, became a starter. Dude, Crochet has been lights out. If that's a household name that you haven't heard yet, that guy has the potential to be everything that Michael Kopech is not. And honestly, I'm calling it right now. If Crochet can continue doing what he's doing right now, early 2025 Cy Young pick for me on next year's show.
That's quite the proclamation. We'll have to keep tabs on that. Just a quick thing that I wanted to point out about Cal today as well. He got squeezed on a couple of pitches. I think it might have been his second walk of the day. But, you know, you're seeing him be a little bit more composed and a little bit more collected on the mound, right? He's using his breathing to kind of slow the game down and kind of refocus and recenter himself, which I think, you know, I don't want to call it like a sign of maturity or whatever. But Tanner was a guy that we've definitely seen run hot in the past, wants to get the ball, wants to throw it, doesn't look at the pitch clock, and is just firing balls in left and right, whether it be in the strike zone or not. And so to see him take that little bit of additional time to, you know, kind of slow it down, get back into his routine, get back into, you know, I guess his comfort zone, for lack of better terms, is definitely something that I'm excited to see and hope to see him utilize in the future. Any other honorable mentions for the stud segment?
As far as studs go, you know, the bullpen, I mean, Chris Martin gave up a run, so the bullpen wasn't super stellar. I will say Kenley didn't issue a walk, so I guess that's worthy of an honorable mention. Jaron,
wait. We're going to talk about the bullpen. We're not going to talk about how Justin Slade struck out 5 guys in 2 innings of work.
He did, in fact, actually. That. We probably should. Go ahead, Charlie.
We really should.
Yeah, talk
we
about
really
him.
We really should. Yeah, he's been absolutely phenomenal. He's had, let's see, including that appearance, I think that's his 4th appearance technically, even though his first appearance this season, he didn't register an out because he was the one, unfortunately, that gave up the hit, if I'm not mistaken, to Julio Rodriguez that ended up losing the game. Has not allowed a hit in his last 3 appearances. So that's 4 2/3 or 5 2/3 now, has struck out 6 guys, has allowed no walks. The guy has just been everything you're looking for in a legitimate almost closer. I mean, he's been phenomenal. And at the same time, like, you don't necessarily have to be facing good teams or bad teams, because even if you're facing bad teams, you could still give up hits. The guy's not allowing anyone to get on base. He's been phenomenal.
And I didn't realize till recently he was a Rule 5 guy. I was like, I was looking him up. I'm like, well, where did we draft him? How did he come through the system? And I was like, oh no, we got him this winter, Rule 5. So, and if you're not familiar with the Rule 5, if you're somewhat of a casual fan, so he wasn't protected on the 40 man by other teams. We lost. Who did we lose?
Shane Song.
Well, that was last year, and then mm-hmm. and then we got him back. And if you don't keep him on your 26-man roster, meaning he's going to stay with the big club the whole year, if you want to option him, you have to give him back to the team that you took him from. And then so with – where was I going with that? Oh, and so this year we had Shane Drohan – that pitched pretty well for us in the minors. We didn't protect him and he was snagged, so we lost him. And he's going to have to stay on whoever took him. He's going to have to stay on their roster all year, or they have to return him to us. So we have to do the same thing with Slayton, but the way it's going right now, you know, we're in good shape as far as keeping him up there. So, but getting back to the honorable mentions, Jaron Duran 4-for-15. That sounds like a bad series, really, for Jaron, but still pretty productive. He was 2-for-5. He hit a critical home run on Friday night in the first game of the series. It put us back up by one. I forget how we got that that eighth run in there, but it was a big moment for Duran, and he drove in a couple that night, and also had an RBI on Saturday, and relatively quiet in the finale, just 1-for-6, but still very productive series for him. Tristan Casas, 4-for-12, first home run of 2024 happened in game one. Looks like he's kind of getting back into his rhythm. And he did have 3 strikeouts, but Detmers was like mowing down everyone on Saturday. That guy was unbelievable. And there were tons of strikeouts that night. Let me just go through them here. So we got 6, 10, 12, 14 strikeouts on Saturday. So, and looks like we only had 3 hits. But other than that, I think that about covers the honorables.
I mean, Duran did everything in his power to try to get his game too. You know, he had the lone RBI, made a big catch and left, and he kind of came unraveled for us as an organization there. But speaking of things getting unraveled, on the other side of the coin is the duds for the weekend, unfortunately. So Charlie, we'll kick it over to you. Who is your dud for this weekend?
My dud for this one was Josh Winkowski, and it sucks to have to put him in this slot because it wasn't all his fault. Poor fielding around him really kind of created this perfect nightmare storm because you have a couple fielding errors. I think he hit a batter, if I'm not mistaken, and then he gave up a grand slam, a game-tying grand slam to Logan Ohapi in a game that we ultimately ended up winning. But we just saw him completely implode. And if there was, one player that wishes this series didn't happen, it was him, because I mean, the series would have been even more lopsided if that blow up didn't happen, but you feel for him. It just went from bad to worse for him. So for me, Josh Winkowski, I'm going to be completely open and honest in saying that I don't anticipate this type of performance on a regular basis. I think Winkowski will right the ship, but you know, giving up a grand slam, regardless on if these were on you or not, not pretty. So Wink, dud.
Terry?
It wasn't a good situation for Winkowski. It made a very winnable game suddenly a very stressful game with a lot of anxiety, but he had a good series coming into this one, so it's I would say that's a blip. You know, it's not like a couple other guys we have that things just kind of get away from him for a few appearances. And I have no worry about Winkowski. I think he's still going to come back and probably shut him right down.
It very much was one of those series where, you know, you have to pick a dud, right? And his performance is definitely, we'll call it, worthy of that. Obviously the grand slam was aided by 2 errors, plays that, you know, I think we normally make 9 to 9.5 times out of 10. And it was perhaps the most predictable grand slam we've ever seen, right? A couple of errors, a couple of, you know, base runners that are on when you should have been out of the inning, and, you know, first or second pitch, boom, game's tied, right? We were up 5-1, we were cruising. You're like, oh, cool, I could just kind of settle in, enjoy my Friday night, you know. And then all of a sudden, you know, we're out here sweating the game at midnight trying to make it to the end. But like you guys mentioned, you know, this is a guy that we can rely on, have relied on, and will continue to need to rely on moving forward. Glad that it happened in this series if it was going to happen, and that we were able to, you know, weather that storm, be able to come back and kind of put that one to bed in the W column. So we'll keep it moving. Terry, who was your dud for the series?
My dud for the series is going to be Rafi Devers, who had a very critical error that, you know, that led to basically the two runs being scored on Saturday. We ended up losing that game. And as frustrating as that was, because, you know, Devers does have his, he's kind of streaky when it comes to errors, and, you know, and then he'll go a while with some pretty good offense. You'll start to trust him again for a little while, and then he'll have a bad game or two. But I think what that's really a product of is Trevor Story not being several feet to his left. And they've talked about, Lou Maloney especially, how calmer the team is with Trevor Story out there. There's just a more quieter confidence that they haven't had at that position in a long time. And when you take him out of there, it just, you know, errors can be contagious, it seems like. And it was a big spot, and, you know, Devers couldn't get the outs, and, you know, it led to the Red Sox losing the game. And as far as Story goes, it's frustrating. The dude is always hurt. I mean, I'm pretty much ready to put that whole 6-year deal into the bust category at this point. He did have a pretty good series in Oakland offensively, but I just didn't have the confidence he would do it for the full season. And defensively, though, it is going to hurt for as long as he's out. And he's looking at least probably 6 to 8 weeks. I think that's the best case scenario. Worst case scenario, you lose him for the year. And if he needs shoulder surgery, perhaps part of next year, if we want to be stupid about it. Because I think if he's going to need it, just do it now. I mean, even if he comes back, I don't think it's really going to impact the team to the point where they're a postseason team or they're not. I'm still of the mindset, probably not going to be playing in October. So let's take care of it now and have a clean bill of health next year. And I'm not going to lie, I'll probably be waiting for the next shoe to drop as far as his health. It's just, I don't know what it is, but I got in trouble on Twitter over the weekend where I said, you know, the gravity is more intense in Anaheim than it is in Colorado. And people roasted me for it, but that's just my frustration with Story just not staying on the field, not being healthy. And just kind of looking ahead, there's a million, I'm exaggerating, there's tons of options for your middle infield. You can plug and play with so many different players, you know, different combinations. I don't love any of them. There's not one where I'm like, that's it. You can put Vaughn Grissom at short, but he's not a good defender. He was going to tentatively be our second baseman this year, and we were all just kind of hoping for the best. Atlanta wanted to make him an outfielder, so we'll see. Maybe he'll step it up in whatever role that he is given. And then, I mean, Pablo Reyes, you can put him there. Yeah, he'll be adequate, but his bat isn't going to play as an everyday bat. He's been great off the bench, similarly to Reese McGuire. He gets big hits late in games, but I don't love him there. Lou Maloney also mentioned today out on his walk that perhaps Rafaela could get some time there. I have no idea. And then I'm only talking about shortstop. There's other things you can do with second base as well. I don't love it. And we're going to miss the defense from Trevor Story. And I don't know what was going to happen offensively. I was expecting Trevor Story to hit probably 210, 265 on base, with lots of strikeouts. That's really where I thought he would be this year offensively. But Devers was my dud for the, you know, the blunder he had defensively. And it's just going to make us miss Story all that much more.
Charlie?
So the Story thing, like I do recall seeing that message, and I did see some people post some very choice, you know, they had some choice responses, and I get it. Like, we're all kind of frustrated, but at the same time, we're also people too. Like, we feel bad for him. I remember seeing it when he went down. I was trying to figure out what he did because the play was great. It was an amazing diving play. He kept the ball in the infield. I think it was Mike Trout that ripped it, and Trout probably could have taken second on that and just gamesmanship. Like, no, there's a guy who's down. I'm not running regardless of the score of this game. I think I was ready to call it bust on the last time that we talked, where I said, I don't think that Trevor Story's going to be here past 2025. Like, the Red Sox will try to figure out a way for Trevor Story to not be on this team. And, I mean, his value is decreasing by it's decreasing exponentially. More importantly, you know, if the Red, you know, this move was not a good one. We still want him to perform. We still want him to be well. We hope for his quick recovery, but we're also realistic with the fact that injuries are a part of the game. You have superstar pitchers who are also going down at record pace. If he does have to have surgery, to Terry's point, I'd rather you have surgery now and come back and be ready for 2025, because if you're just postponing the inevitable, it's what we did with Chris Sale, and we lost Chris Sale for an additional, what was it, like 3 or 4 months, like almost a whole another year, because we just didn't do the right thing. So ultimately, I do want him to get better, but his health, and we are going to miss his defense, his health should be the top priority. It's not going to make or break this team. You know, if Trevor Story is not on this team, we're not all of a sudden going to become the worst team in baseball. We've been showing just how well we've been able to do in games without his bat. So now it's just trying to replicate that glove.
I mean, you guys have mentioned it, right? His glove has been a revelation to start the season. He's made a ton of spectacular plays out in shortstop, maybe short left field, for whatever you want to call it. And, you know, it's getting harder and harder to defend the narrative that he isn't injury prone, because freak accidents keep happening to him, right? You know, if he was getting a pulled hamstring or a sore oblique or, you know, something like that over and over again, that's a different story. That's an injury prone player that is having soft tissue issues. But he's having, you know, ligament damage or shoulder dislocations trying to make athletic plays. And it's a real bummer, right? You know, this is one of the few players that the front office has gone out and actually invested money in within the last few years. And, you know, to see the return on the investment go as poorly as it's gone, well, maybe not poorly, as unfortunate as it has gone, in an era in which we're trying to ask the front office to spend more money, I don't think bodes well for those hopes, unfortunately. You hope for the best. You hope that he can either, you know, heal quickly or shut it down and start putting, you know, that same intensity that he did towards the brace rehab to the shoulder. And, you know, if we have to look forward to 2025, that's what we're going to do. Any other thoughts or notions? Alrighty. No. Any other duds? My dud. Apologies there. I got a little sidetracked. My dud for the series was Valdez. As we've mentioned before, you know, every series has to have one, and this was the one for me. You know, he made a couple of fine defensive plays, but he also went 0 for 11 at the plate with 4 strikeouts. You know, he came up with a couple of times with guys on base, chances to, you know, either, you know, turn the game in our favor or continue to pad the lead, and he just didn't get it done. It's a bad series. It happens. You know, he's not a guy that we're expecting to hit 330 or carry the offense. But you know, when he does, you know, kind of not get on base or not make any sort of impact, that, that lineup gets a lot shorter, a lot quicker. You know, hopefully he'll be able to bounce back once he gets back on the East Coast in a more, you know, routine schedule, home openers, the whole nine. I'm not too worried about it. Still early in the season. We're going to have some growing pains, right? We're bringing up a lot of prospects. We're bringing up a lot of rookie potential or guys that have had, you know, a cup of coffee in the majors, to say the least. And it's going to take a little bit of time to adjust to the live pitching. It's going to take a little bit of time to adjust to the major league level. So we'll flush it. We'll see what happens back on the East Coast. But Valdez was my dud for the series. Charlie, what are your thoughts?
Well, when you go hitless, you're really not helping the team. Yeah, he did get a couple RBIs. He struck out four times. But, I mean, the season's still so young. The rest of the team has been able to pick him up in a way that I don't think any of us really expected. So the Boston Red Sox have become a relevant team through the first 10 games of the season. We have a guy who's, you know, leading statistics that we didn't think were possible if you weren't getting paid $25-30 million a year. And ultimately, you know, this is only 10 games of the season. I don't think that Manuel Valdez is going to go 0-10 or 0-11 another series where he doesn't do anything. So this is, again, you know, just a blip. I do want to see what the younger guys can do, and this is one of those names. So unfortunate for him to go 0-11, but not the end of the world and certainly not the end of the season. T?
It's unfortunate to see. And, you know, Valdez is kind of like a lottery ticket type guy. You got him in the Vasquez trade. He got off to a great start last year when he was first called up, but he kind of tailed off. And other than a big home run in the Seattle series, he hasn't really been a good, consistent contributor. I'm pulling up his numbers right now. Where is he? Right here. Yeah, hitting 125 on the year, a 143 on base, a slugging percentage of 219. Man, it's just, it's a painful line to look at. And just looking at the bigger picture here, our middle infield is a wasteland. It's like, it's not good offensively. I think he's going to have some defensive blips. As good as he's been, defense has never been what he's been known for. I just, when I'm looking at this team as a 71 win team, I'm thinking, man, where are the runs going to come from? You know, Devers and Casas will help you out here and there, but they're going to need more help than what the rest of the lineup is going to be able to contribute with. And today we had, in the finale, we had eight lefties starting in there. That's insane. That is like way off balance. All winter long, I preached balance and we didn't get it. And hopefully Vasquez can turn it around and be adequate, but I don't know, man. He's not a guy that opposing pitchers are going to be afraid of when he comes up for his next at bat.
Very true. And, you know, it's going to be the growing pains of bringing up the young guys, right? You know, hopefully he can develop offensively, carry some of the bottom half of the order. But, Gary, any dishonorable mentions?
Dishonorable mentions. Reyes was 0-5. Rafaello was having a terrible series until he came off the bench today. He did get a couple of hits with a couple runs batted in, but I continue to be pretty concerned with him. Bobby Dalbec still does not have a hit this year. If you want to be nice and you want to be positive about Bobby in this series, he only struck out 33% of the time. So one out of his three. And Abreu is 0-3. And with Abreu, I mean, the dude needs a bat in his hand every day. He is an everyday player. And unfortunately, with this poor roster construction, I don't think he's going to get it. And Rob Refsnyder will be back, so it's hard to imagine he won't be the odd man out, and then he'll at least go back to the minors where he can hit every day, and maybe eventually we'll need him in an everyday situation, but we're not doing him any justice. I kind of mentioned Garrett Whitlock. He didn't give up an earned run, but he wasn't efficient. By the end of the fourth inning, he was at 84 pitches. He walked four guys. Hopefully he can kind of rein that in a little bit. Chris Martin gave up his first earned run since last July, so that streak is over. And I guess that's about all I have. I mean, we did win the series, so I'll stop bagging on them.
Bobby Dalbec was 0-for-8 this year with 6 strikeouts. So literally, before his most recent appearance, 75% of his at-bats were strikeouts. So are we in the camp now where, God bless him, but he's just not a major leaguer? Are we in that camp, like, all collectively, where everyone's putting all the chips in? Because I think it's going to be silly if Bobby Dalbec hits, like, a mammoth, like, 500-foot towering home run, and people are going to think that he's back. I like him, but I don't – it's just not working still.
I don't know if there's a guy in Major League Baseball's history that needs to change his hearing more than Bobby Dalbec. At this point, it's got to be mental. Like, he needs to go to the West Coast, to the Central, somewhere else, and just disappear, come back, revamp, do whatever he needs to do, just out of the light of this organization. I don't think it's like this organization failed him or he failed them or, you know, whatever. It's just sometimes it doesn't pan out. Maybe, you know, a rebirth somewhere else is what he needs. Terry?
A domino effect of failures had to happen for Bobby Dalbec to make this team. And that's what happened. We didn't get it done. We didn't get the bats we needed. We didn't make the trades we needed to make. And Bobby Dalbec's on the bench for the Boston Red Sox. And it's not going to last forever, but it'll last for a little while longer. And man, mercifully, he needs to be elsewhere. He hit very good in Worcester last year. Maybe he's a career AAA guy, but he doesn't have a future in Major League Baseball as a viable, even guy off the bench. There is no role that Bobby Dalbec can adequately hold and contribute to, you know, a Major League team.
It's unfortunate, but it might be where we are. Any other thoughts you guys would like to capture tonight, mention, bring in here at the end?
No, we'll find out on Monday, or hopefully on Monday. I guess they could withhold it till Tuesday because that's when we play next. But we might have an ultimate verdict on Trevor Story's status, or at least a clear timetable, I should say. So we'll be on the lookout for that.
Because he did go for imaging today, I believe, right? Today at 4 p.m.?
I think. Yeah, he's scheduled to meet with Red Sox medical staff on Monday, correct?
All righty. Well, if there's nothing else to add, we will wrap there. Thank you all for joining us and have a great day.